Gentlemen, our first case today is case number 53895, Summit Village, Inc. versus Hilltop Duplexes. This is the northern panel. That's the name we use. This northern panel hears cases from Washoe, the rural areas, and what we call overflow Clark County. Today, the Chief Justice, Michael Douglas, is sitting in for Justice Mark Gibbons as this case was handled in the lower court by Justice Gibbons' brother, Michael. Also, Justice Christina Pickering is the other member of this panel, and I'm Michael Cherry. Parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Tappan for the appellant, Mr. Matuska for the respondent. If you'd like to reserve some time.
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Christy Tappan, and I represent Summit Village Incorporated. Summit Village seeks a reversal of the district court because the district court erred as a matter of law when it declined to enforce the Summit Village Declaration. The declaration gives Hilltop the responsibility of repairing and maintaining its wooden parking deck. The declaration should be enforced. The district court's decision has adverse implications for homeowners associations throughout Nevada because it limits how associations can allocate common element expenses and it restricts the freedom to contract. In this argument, I'd like to focus on the statutory framework that the court should use to analyze who is responsible for the repair and maintenance of the Hilltop parking deck. The analysis begins with NRS 116.31.15, which provides for how common expenses can be allocated among units in a planned community, such as Summit Village. Subsection 2 is the first section that the court should look to, and it provides that all common expenses, including the reserves, must be assessed against all the units in accordance with the allocation set forth in the declaration pursuant to subsections 1 and 2 of NRS 116.2107.
So the very doesn't that get us to the heart of the matter? There's findings that were made by the district court judge in granting the injunction that there was no exclusive use, that anyone with a Summit Village parking sticker was allowed to use that parking area, that Hilltop did not have exclusive control of that? But that seems to be one of the stumbling blocks as we get into this interpretation.
I think it is, but I think the way that NRS 116.31.15 is laid out is that the first step that the court should take, and it is the first step that the district court took, the first step is to look to see if the declaration complies with NRS 116.2107.
Which is another issue as well, because the district court had some problems as to what you're purporting to be a declaration.
So it's correct that the district court concluded that this declaration didn't comply with 2107, but our position is that that was an error as a matter of law, and it was the first error and the most important error, because our position is that the way that the declaration allocates the common expense of maintaining a walkway is completely appropriate under 3115.
As to that declaration, why is it an error of law to conclude that the declaration?
I'm sorry.
Why is it an error of law to conclude that the declaration was improper?
Because I think if you look at the actual text of 3115 and 2107, you'll see that it actually allows the kind of allocation you have in the declaration to go forth. The district court focused on the words each and all in these two subsections. And in 3115, when it says that all common expenses must be assessed against all the units, we read that to mean it's a more global take on how expenses in the association have to be allocated. All of the common elements, all of those expenses, have to be allocated to all the units. It's a way of accounting for everything. But it doesn't mean that a single specific common element expense needs to be allocated to all of the units. And I think that's also true for 2107, where it says the declaration must allocate to each unit in a planned community a fraction or percentage of the common expenses. It just means that the formula that the declaration uses to allocate those expenses has to apply to all of the units and that it has to account for all these expenses. It doesn't mean every single common expense has to be allocated to every single unit. But to kind of move on to the next issue that you were discussing, which was the exclusive use, I think that analysis comes in the next step. It's only if you find that the declaration doesn't comply with 3115 subsection 2 and 2107 do you move on to the next section in 3115, which is subsection 4, and that's when you look at whether or not it was a limited common element, and you start to look at exclusive use. So I think it's important to note here that the Summit Village Declaration predated NRS 116. So you're not going to see anywhere in the declaration the phrase limited common element or that the definition of limited common element. But NRS 116 was designed to work harmoniously with declarations by operation of law. According to 116.1206, the declaration doesn't need to be amended. It automatically complies with NRS 116. So we think the way that the declaration assigned the common expense of walkways, that it's those units that built and use those walkways for ingress and egress have to maintain it. We think that's an appropriate way of establishing a limited common element, since you're not going to actually see the word limited common element in our declaration. So in subsection 4, and you only need to do this analysis if subsection 2 isn't enough to reverse the district court. Subsection 4 has two subparts.
Before you get to subsection 4, take me through your analysis of why under the CC&Rs these expenses are properly allocable to Hilltop alone as opposed to the Summit.
Okay, so you'd like me to focus on the language in the declaration.
Just quickly. But you're relying on the second amended one and the definition of wooden parking decks, correct, in the district?
That's correct. So in section, make sure I've got it right, it's 2.13 of the declaration. It includes a definition of the term walkway.
And those are the amended CC&Rs that post-date the creation of the Hilltop piece of this development, correct?
That's correct. And the definition specifically includes any paths, sidewalks, driveways, wooden parking decks, or any type of easement for ingress and egress. So it's very clear in the amended declaration that wooden parking decks are included in the definition of walkway. It's also our position, though, that even in the earlier CC&Rs from 1968, a wooden parking deck would be included in this definition because it is broad enough. It includes sidewalks, paths, driveways, any type of easement for ingress and egress. It was just clarified in the amended declaration.
Tell me why the district court's determination is a question of fact to which we owe deference rather than a question of interpreting the CC&Rs with respect to whether this is or is not a walkway.
So I agree that the district court's conclusion that this is a walkway is a factual finding of the court that the court should give deference to, and we would very much like the court to affirm that factual finding. It's supported by substantial evidence. Where Summit Village takes issue with the district court was on its legal analysis. And again, to go back to that subsection 2 of 3115, we think the court never should have found that the declaration didn't comply with subsection 2 and 2107. And then that error was compounded when it moved on to the limited common element analysis, that subpart A and subpart B. Our position is that the declaration appropriately created a limited common element of this wooden parking deck that should have been and was consistently maintained and repaired by Hilltop until this dispute arose. So to continue explaining how the declaration allocated the cost of maintaining this parking deck to Hilltop, first we have that definition of walkway. And again, the court made a factual finding that this wooden parking deck is a walkway under that definition. The next relevant section is section 321. That's where it talks about the duties to maintain walkways. It basically says walkways should be maintained just like party walls. Then you look at section 320, where it talks about how you maintain a party wall. And it essentially says that the parties or the units that share a party wall will maintain it jointly. So in this case, we have a bunch of units that use this parking deck. They should maintain it jointly. But that's not the only section that explains that Hilltop should be responsible for this walkway, this wooden parking deck. In section 7.1 and 7.7, I think you see the clearest examples of this allocation. The declaration talks about the mountainous nature of the terrain and how it anticipates that walkways will be built for each unit. And then it says each walkway shall be considered appurtenant to the residence lot or resident unit. It benefits as an easement. So it's really assigning a specific right to these unit owners to use the parking deck. And then it says that the resident lot owners and residence unit owners benefited by such walkways shall be fully responsible for the maintenance thereof. And that's in section 7.7 A and B. You'll also even see the allocation in section 4.11, where the section generally says, you know, individual units are responsible for maintaining their walkways, and if they don't, Summit Village can step in, repair it, and assess the cost back to those specific unit owners with an administration kind of fee. They can tack on a little bit more for the trouble of having to assume that responsibility.
Okay, so your main argument is that the CC&Rs are clear that this is a walkway, that's a finding of fact, we must uphold it, and therefore we don't go past subparagraph 2 in 3115, correct?
That's our primary argument. The declaration.
And then your next argument is subparagraph 4A and B.
That's correct.
And I'd like to hear from you on what the difference is between those two.
Between A and B?
Yes.
So in subsection A, it actually talks about the definition. It refers to the phrase limited common element. So I think you need to look to the definition of limited common element in the statute. Our position is that the limited common element, where it says the limited common element has to be assigned, that the declaration did that assignment, and that's enough to get us to the point where you can construe the declaration as a matter of law to have created the limited common element. Section B.
What do you do with the court's finding that the use was not non-exclusive? That's a problem under subparagraph
A. It is. It's
a
problem for our case, and it's a problem because that was a finding of fact. But it doesn't say in subsection, it doesn't make any reference to exclusive use under subsection A, and I'm sure you'll hear from opposing counsel about this analysis as well, but the district court was actually doing an analysis under subpart B. It was talking about exclusive use and exclusive benefit, and you won't see the phrase exclusive benefit anywhere in the statute.
But 116059 or 039 defines limited common element in terms of exclusive use, correct?
It does. It does use
so
the
A
phrase.
Would require exclusive use to apply.
I think that's a fair interpretation of the statute. I think you can also say by operation, in the definition of limited common element under 059, there's at least the opportunity for by operation of law a common element to become a limited common element. And I will concede it's not our best argument, but if you look at NRS 116-2102, it talks about unit boundaries, and subsection 4 is the one where it talks about structures that are actually physically attached to a unit. The parking deck here is attached to a series of walkways that are physically attached to this unit. I think it's a fair argument to say that you could construe this parking deck as a fixture of the collective Summit Village homes, and you could treat it as a limited common element under that definition.
Could you make your argument for subparagraph 4B? And I'm sorry I've cut into your time.
Oh, that's fine.
I'll give you some extra time.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'll try to do it briefly. I think subpart B is more broadly written. It says any common expense or portion thereof benefiting fewer than all the units must be assessed exclusively against the units benefited. And our position is that this parking deck really benefits the Hilltop homeowners that use it to access their units, that use it for parking. The district court, it's our position that it erred when it used such a broad interpretation of the term benefit. It decided that because there's a benefit in having parking throughout Summit Village, that all the units in Summit Village benefited from the parking lot at Hilltop. I think that's such a broad definition that any kind of term in the CC&R, which are generally designed to benefit all the units, that you'd never be able to allocate a common expense to less than all the units under subpart B. So I think you have to look at benefit more narrowly. It's what units primarily are benefited, or just as a practical matter are benefited. And
also,
here,
the court makes, in their final order, they say, further, it is inequitable to assess only the lower 8 Hilltop units for the repair of this deck. While they are primarily benefited by the deck, any Summit Village unit owner, their guests or lessee, may use a deck and may have.
I think
that's the finding that the district court makes. What's wrong with that?
I think the finding that anyone in Summit Village can use that parking deck, I think that's an error. It's a factual finding and it's an error. It's not supported by substantial evidence. Not only does the declaration...
Why was it not? What was the substantial evidence that counters that?
So that finding was based on a number of undisclosed witnesses who testified that they had occasionally seen vehicles that they thought didn't belong to any Hilltop homeowners. But you'll see, if you look at the transcript in that section, especially in cross-examination, they weren't full-time residents. They weren't responsible for patrol.
Wasn't there some other information supplied to the court as to the policy as to parking in general and the non-enforcement of the rules and regulations in the Summit community?
I think that the credible evidence on this point, which came from the Summit Village individuals who had consistently enforced this parking policy, reflected that Summit Village did enforce the policy, and that if there was a Summit Village...
There was testimony that no one was ever towed, I think.
There was testimony that the parking person couldn't recall ever towing a Summit Village vehicle.
Go ahead.
Couldn't finish your thought.
Thank you. So they testified that they could never recall a Summit Village vehicle with a parking pass being towed from parking at Hilltop. But they did recall towing vehicles and testified if there was a car that had the wrong number, they give them numbered passes. And at Hilltop, there's a restricted parking sign, and then it lists which units should be parking there. They would give them a tag, and then usually the vehicle would move if it wasn't in the right area. And then as a practical matter, Hilltop's geographically isolated from the rest of Summit Village. No one would really want to park at Hilltop. If they live somewhere else in Summit Village, they'd have to walk really far.
Just one last thing. As to the argument that you make about impairment of contract or as the constitutional basis, isn't there information in the enabling statute for 116 that was came into effect because of the problems of these types of communities and how they were run, so the state had appropriate police powers or appropriate reason to adopt this language?
Our argument on the contract clause is not that NRS 116 violates the contract clause. It's that the district court's interpretation in this specific case does, because it changes the maintenance responsibilities of individual homeowners. It really changes how each homeowner in Summit Village is now responsible for maintaining common elements, and that changes their contract.
Thank you for that clarification.
I'm going to give you 2 minutes on rebuttal, but Mr. Matuska, I'm going to give you 17 minutes. I'll give you the extra 2 minutes also at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If you need to use it. So you have 17 minutes, and then she'll have, Ms. Tappan, I'll have 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Michael Matuska, and I'm here today on behalf of the Hilltop Duplexes Homeowners Association, as well as the two individuals who were named as plaintiffs in the court below and who are also respondents in this court. I just want to explain real briefly why the individuals were named. The individuals were specifically selected. The first one, Sherry Rich, is a relatively new owner. She purchased her unit in 2005, and she was added to underscore the point that she could have no knowledge of what Summit Village is, of what Summit Village alleges was the past practices or the intent or anything else that was not written and recorded in the CC&Rs that Summit Village is relying on to support its case. And the other individual is Maxine Yip, who was one of the original purchasers of the Hilltop duplexes, and she was added to underscore the point that she should not be subject to a new assessment burden, that although homeowners in a common interest community understand as they need to be that assessments may increase, they are not supposed to be subjected to a new assessment burden, which is really what we're talking about in this case, that Summit Village is trying to shift its maintenance burden to a sub-association, and that's improper. And I'm going to go on to explain why it is actually prohibited by the Nevada Revised Statutes. The real issue in this case is which association, the Master Association Summit Village, or the sub-association Hilltop, has a maintenance responsibility for this parking area. And to decide that issue, we need to answer the question, as the lower court did, of whether the parking area is a limited common element or a general a common element. We need to observe a few points of law, all of which are embodied in the Nevada Revised Statutes. The first one is that all the area outside of the footprint of the duplexes is Summit Village, a common area, and it's owned by Summit Village. The second point is that all of the common area is defined either as a general common area or a limited common area. The third is under the current framework of the Nevada Revised Statutes, and this is made by reference to NRS 116.3115, an association must maintain reserves for the repair and replacement of all of the components of its common area. And the fourth point of law is the one that I think is the main issue today. There's an exception to the reserve requirement that an association need not maintain reserves for the limited a common area if that area has been allocated as a responsibility of a sub-association. The case being advocated by Summit Village fails on the law and on the facts. The case that they are advocating is that the general common area can be allocated to a sub-association, and I submit that that's precluded by the Nevada Revised Statutes.
What do you do with 3115's paragraph 4B? That seems to me to be speaking, addressing something other than limited common elements, but nonetheless providing for an allocation of common expense to fewer than all of the units.
Yes, Your Honor. To the extent that it is required by the declaration, which invites an analysis of the CC&Rs, but the best case for Summit Village in this case is that the CC&Rs provide that these types of expenses have to be allocated to the units that benefit from them, and Judge Gibbons found that it's general parking, and all the units in the development benefit from the general parking.
Would you concede then that if your position carries the day, that Summit could simply close these parking lots and say you don't have any kind of easement, there's no burden that is imposed on this to maintain this as a parking lot, and since you're not claiming a benefit unique to your tie between your unit and the parking lots, we could just turn that into a playground or...
It was a threat, and I would submit that... as a property owner, they can possibly do it, but it would run afoul of some other provisions of the CC&Rs and the Nevada Revised Statutes. And pursuant to the Nevada Revised Statutes, the Board of Directors of Summit Village is made of fiduciaries to the members of the association, and I submit it would be a breach of their fiduciary duty not to maintain the common areas. They have a fiduciary duty imposed by statute and by the CC&Rs to maintain the common areas, and they have to do that, and they
can't. So your argument is that you're entitled to have those parking spaces maintained, yet rather than paying 1/22nd per unit, you want to pay 1/311th?
311th, yes, Your Honor, because they are not exclusive use areas. All the it's general parking. And subsection 4 of NRS 116.3115 only allows an allocation of the expenses. Our position was that this should have been analyzed under subpart A, first of all, because subpart A speaks directly to the allocation of expenses for a limited element.
The problem I have is that the statute has two parts, A and B, and I'm not sure what B is addressing. If it is not addressing limited common elements, clearly. So B speaks to something else. What does it speak to if it doesn't apply to these parking lots?
As a point of interpretation, I would submit that the specific has to carry over the general, and when we have a subsection A that addresses the allocation of expenses for the elements, that's a section that should govern. But your question is, what does B speak to? I addressed this in the briefs in the court below, and I addressed it briefly in our opening brief here. It refers to other types of expenses. The annotations to the Model Uniform Common Interest Community Act has an example of expenses for cost of nursing in an assisted living facility. There is such a thing, as an assisted living facility that could meet the definition of a common interest community. And not all of the residents in the facility are going to require the nursing services at the same level. And so it would make sense that although the nurses themselves might be hired by the association, the actual allocation of the cost should go to the people who use those types of expenses. We can envision some situations that are a little closer to the development that we have here. There probably are ways to assign the expenses for trash removal on a unit-by-unit basis. There could be some large units that use three trash cans, some small units that use one trash can.
But you see it entirely as service-related?
And utilities. There are some associations provide cable service, for instance. And people might subscribe to different packages. So it depends. There are different types of services and utilities that can be allocated on a unit by unit basis. In the final analysis, though, that doesn't really affect our result in this case because, again, Judge Gibbons focused on the question of who benefits. And he found and concluded that these parking areas provide a benefit to the association as a whole.
Does that rebut Ms. Tappan's argument about her interpretation of 3115 and 2107 that each and all, where it doesn't mean every common expense has to be allocated to all units instead of the units that benefit by the expense?
Well, she's completely wrong about that. I mean, this is a uniform assessment requirement of the Nevada Revised Statutes, and it's one of the most important provisions of Chapter 116. The expenses for common areas have to be allocated to all of the units. There are two ways to allocate it, though. You can have a formula that allocates it essentially on a square footage basis. Again, I referred to a situation where one unit might use three trash cans and one might use one trash can. There can be associations that allocate the cost of the common area expenses based on a square footage basis. If you have 5,000 a square foot a unit, they might be assessed. They're assessed on a square footage basis, but it would work out to a larger assessment than a unit that had a square area of 1,000 square feet. But the point is, it's still uniform to the extent that it's being assessed against all of the units according to a fair method. What they're saying is that they want to have some elements that are used by the association as a whole that are paid for by less than the association as a whole. It's completely prohibited by the Nevada Revised Statutes. And I should go a step further and add that even if Judge Gibbons had found that the parking area at issue here was exclusively for the benefit of the Hilltop units, he would still have to address the question of whether the expenses for that parking area had actually been allocated to the Hilltop units. Because he found that this was not an exclusive use deck, he did not have to reach this decision on the allocation, but he did. And he concluded that the cost had never actually been allocated to the Hilltop units. The argument the council is raising today is not what their witnesses testified to in trial. The argument that they're raising today is that somehow the allocation was made pursuant to their CC&Rs. In the first place, if they were right, the CC&Rs would violate the Nevada Revised Statutes. The CC&Rs have to be interpreted to comply with the Nevada Revised Statutes. But Judge Gibbons found
The prefatory language to 31154, it's changed. Today it's except as otherwise provided in the governing documents, which would
yes.
be the CC&Rs. Mm-hmm. And what was in effect when this case was litigated below was something similar. So it seems to me it recognizes that the contract documents can vary with respect to allocation of expenses that benefit fewer than all of the
yes.
units.
Yes, exactly. Yes, Your Honor. I'm going a step beyond that now. And even if Judge Gibbons had decided that the parking deck is for the exclusive benefit of the Hilltop duplexes, we still have to address the question of whether the expenses were allocated to the Hilltop duplexes. And he did find that there was never an allocation to the Hilltop to the duplexes. Summit Village raised 3 points in the court below to support their argument that the expenses had been allocated. All of them were rejected. The first argument was simply that it was always supposed to be that way. It was understood to be that way. That's the issue of intent, and I respectfully submit that their intent does not matter and is not binding on people like Sherry Rich, who purchased their units in 2005. She's bound by what's in the CC&Rs and what's in the Nevada Revised Statute.
But if it's ambiguous, people's conduct in reliance on an existing contract is some evidence of how the parties understood their agreement, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but the ambiguity, but CC&Rs are strictly construed, especially when you're trying to shift a maintenance burden. So the analysis of whether the CC&Rs are ambiguous is a little more difficult here. The first point that Summit Village raised to support their argument of allocation was that it had always been that way, and then they resorted to this issue of the past practices, and they could not sustain the evidence on that.
Counsel, let's back up to that first point you just raised, because it's an area that I'm a little bit concerned with, and I'm concerned with you did not argue any response to Summit Village's position as to the contract clause that they offered, the violation in the interpretation made by the district court. There's no response by Hilltop as to that position. What do you have to say about that?
Your Honor, it's been addressed by the Nevada Revised Statutes. Pursuant to the Nevada Revised Statutes, the CC&Rs have to be construed in accordance with the Nevada Revised Statutes.
But their position is that by your interpretation, it puts an unfair burden on the other owners.
They say that, but by Judge Gibbons' interpretation, it puts an unfair burden on the Hilltop duplexes that they would have to pay to maintain what is common area for the entire association. Your Honor, the point I was trying to make is that the argument that the allocation occurred in the amended CC&Rs was rejected by Judge Gibbons, and that isn't even the argument that their witnesses testified to in the court below. Their witnesses in the court below testified that those CC&Rs did not impose any new duties on the Hilltop duplexes, that it maintained what was already the current practice, and that's when we had to have this examination of when was this ever assigned to the Hilltop duplexes? It wasn't. In the original set of CC&Rs, Summit Village was quite clear that it owned the parking areas and had the duty to maintain the parking areas. Those same provisions are incorporated into the amended CC&Rs. And in fact, when their witnesses were asked if the CC&Rs changed what was the prior arrangement, they said no. And so we had to do this analysis of the past practices. And what Summit Village came up with, and this is actually what they quoted in their briefs to this court. This is what they quoted in the briefs in this court when they refer to the past practices from the 1980s or the 1990s. What they argued in their brief to this court, and this is on their answering brief and opening brief on appeal at page 12, is that Hilltop was contemplating major structural repair of its wooden parking deck in 1997 and 1998. It discharged that responsibility in 1995, 1997, and 1998 when it contemplated and then deferred renovation of the deck. There is no argument to support this theory of the past practices. If I could just refer the court to one important exhibit from the court below, it's exhibit 23, the minutes of the Summit Village meeting from 2005, where they accept the coverage map and identify all the parking areas that are their responsibility to maintain, This parking area is identified as one of the parking areas on the coverage map from 2005 that Summit Village says it has a duty to maintain. So the issue of past practices is backward, as that Summit Village has always accepted that this is their parking deck, but now they are advocating a result where only the Hilltop duplexes have to pay for to replace this parking deck, even though other people park there, and even though it provides a benefit to all. If there are no further questions, I will just conclude by asking this court to affirm the decision from the court below.
Chief Justice, do you have any more questions?
I don't.
Justice, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Tappan, you have 2 minutes in rebuttal.
I think it's interesting that opposing counsel opened his remarks by talking about a new assessment burden. If there's a new assessment burden in this case, it's a new assessment burden on Summit Village. This parking deck has been traditionally maintained by the Hilltop units, the developer that built it and the subsequent unit owners that maintained it. That's what the record reflects. That's what the past maintenance history reflects. So if there's any new assessment burden, it was created by the district court's decision, which made all the other Summit Village unit owners responsible for maintaining this parking deck. And that kind of touches back on our contract clause argument and our public policy argument, that this is really changing the responsibility of all of Summit Village homeowners in the association. This doesn't really just affect this parking deck either. There are a lot of walkways throughout Summit Village, and although the district court tried to limit its decision just to this parking deck, it's intellectually difficult to see how this case couldn't be used to say that all of the walkways throughout Summit Village that are all on common area now need to be maintained by Summit Village. That really changes their reserve requirements. It puts a huge burden on all of those other homeowners. That shouldn't be allowed to go forward.
Counsel, as you make that argument, do you have a response as to Exhibit 23 minutes that counsel pointed out to us?
I do. It's my understanding that this map was not created for the purpose that counsel suggested, which was to explain all of the property that Summit Village was responsible for maintaining. It was a map for a different purpose, and I don't want to misspeak, so I can't say exactly what that purpose was, but this is not a maintenance map. I think it was for some Tahoe Regional Planning Association requirement, but I'm not positive about that. And then, you know, counsel explicitly said that my interpretation of 3115 and 20107 was incorrect. I'd like to refer the court to the Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act, comment number 2, where it says that the section does not require that formulas by the declarant be justified, but just that the formulas be explained. So as long as the declaration makes a clear allocation of expenses, that should be acceptable and complies with NRS 116.
Thank you.
I have a question on
go
that.
Ahead. Ms. McGreen?
What about sections 4.5 and 4.6 of the CC&Rs? Apropos your final point, which is by contract, the statute permits parties to arrange the allocation of expenses. But these CC&Rs seem to me to be somewhat unclear, given that in some extent they're saying these are arguably wooden deck walkways and therefore taxable to the individual units that are benefited by them. And then 4.6 says the association shall maintain parking areas. I mean, it seems to me it's not clear from the CC&Rs, and that's one of the problems in the case.
I think it's fair to say that it can be confusing to see, especially in 4.6, where it talks about maintaining parking areas. But I think if you review the history of Summit Village and how it was developed and how things have been maintained, there's a difference between these wooden parking decks, which are physically attached to these wooden walkways that were built for access to units, and then parking areas, which, you know, specifically the kind of like general parking areas that were there, they were deeded over to the association by the county as condemned property. And so the association maintains those spaces, but those are different from parking spaces that were built by developers for specific units, and they're set forth in the declaration as something distinct.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
The panel thanks both counsel for your interesting and skilled arguments and for your briefs in this matter. And this case will stand submitted.